Welcome to Midpoint. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. Today we're going to look at a former athlete who took on the behemoth NCAA in court and won. Our guest is Ed O'Bannon, the 1995 Player of the Year in college basketball. Later on in the show, we'll hear an impassioned speech by a Blake High School student from Friday's walkout and march against gun violence. And we'll take your calls. Here's the number to call in, 813-239-9663. You can email dj at wmnf.org or you can text 813-433-0885. We begin with Ed Bannon. In 1995, he and his UCLA Bruins teammates cut down the nets at the Final Four after winning the NCAA College Basketball Championship. O'Bannon won National Player of the Year awards that year as well. But more than a decade later, in 2009, O'Bannon sued the NCAA and video game company Electronic Arts on behalf of current and former college athletes who received no compensation when their names, images, and likenesses are sold. In 2014, a federal judge found out that the NCAA was violating federal antitrust laws, and that was upheld by an appeals court in 2015. O'Bannon's new book about this fight is called Court Justice: The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. It was released this month and is co-written with law professor Michael McCann. Welcome to WMNF's Midpoint, Ed O'Bannon.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining us. Well, let's begin with what gave you the idea to challenge the use of your likeness in the first place when you saw a video game depicting your UCLA team. There were some familiar faces there, right?
Yes, there were. I was watching my 95 team, the championship team, play. And my brother was on the team, and, my close friends and who I consider brothers, Toby and Tyus and everybody. I saw that game, and then a couple weeks later, Sonny Vaccaro, a close friend of mine and mentor, gave me a call with his plans on suing the NC2A, and I had told him what I saw recently, a couple weeks prior to this conversation, and he thought that I would be perfect. The perfect plaintiff for this lawsuit. And so we went ahead and gave it a shot.
And this wasn't an easy decision for you. You had to consider what the blowback would be for your family and even, how people might react given that you're an African-American athlete.
Absolutely. This wasn't a conversation that took place over, a half hour or so, 20-minute conversation. I mean, I took it home. My wife and I weighed the pros and cons. At the time, our kids were, two out of three of our kids were pretty young or in the middle school age and showed potential to possibly earn a scholarship in their respective sports. And so that, we thought about that. We talked about just many different things. Absolutely, the fact that I am black and what kind of brushback that, there would be as well. So there were many things that we talked about.
And we'll talk a lot more about race later on in the conversation, I hope. But let's go back to the video game. EA Sports removed all the names from the players just before the game was published. So the sweater of the player that was depicting you in the video game, it didn't say O'Bannon on it, the T-shirt. Why did they remove the names of the players?
They removed them because the names told the people that were, they basically said that, that's who you were. So you take the names off, it doesn't say anything, as well as the names on the back of the jerseys, as well as just when, describing the athlete, when you're looking at the game itself. So they did that way they wouldn't have to pay the individual players, and they could just pay the universities or the athletic departments or just the NC2A, whoever received the check.
And that came out in the discovery when you did your trial. I mean, there were emails to that effect, essentially.
Exactly. And that was one that we kind of thought, but not necessarily knew or had proof. Once that was discovered, that's when EA Sports decided they weren't going to make the games or sell them anymore.
And your lawsuit was against EA Sports and the NCAA, but before it got to trial, EA reached a settlement with you. Why did they settle, and what did the athletes get out of that?
The athletes got anywhere from, $500 or so. I can't remember exactly the low number, but up to $5,000, I believe, is what some of them got. So depending on how much you were in the game and that sort of thing, I guess led to what your settlement check would be.
A lot of your book is devoted to poking holes in the NCAA's story about amateurism in college sports and some of the contradictions there. And I hope we get to talk about that a lot during this interview. So let's start with this concept of the student athlete. And that's a term that you call a myth. Why?
Well, because the athlete, first and foremost, is on scholarship to play their particular sport. And then, oh, by the way, you have to go to school. If they wanted anyone else, it didn't matter about their athletic ability, they would pick anybody. So first and foremost, you're there to play your sport. Your time and your schedule is devoted to everything sport related, whether it's practice, game, travel, workouts, it doesn't matter. And then after that, you can, whatever your schedule will allow is the classes that you can take. So, first and foremost, you're an athlete, and then you also go to school. That's how I saw it. I saw myself as an athletic student because I knew that I was there to play basketball. And that was my goal. So, everyone chooses to live out their college careers however they want. Me personally, I was an athlete, and then I also kind of went to school just enough to play. Everyone's different.
Our guest is Ed O'Bannon. He was the 1995 College Basketball Player of the Year, and his new book is called Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. Let's hear more about what it was like to be an athlete in college, and NCAA rules say you can spend 20 hours a week on sports, if I have that correct, but how much of your time was in class versus how much time did you spend practicing?
Well, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I was on the court. My time was mostly devoted, basically, to playing basketball and to my sport. It can be double. It could be up to 40 as far as athletic is concerned. I did basically the bare minimum. I went to class and I went to study hall, and both were possibly an hour or 2 hours in class and then 2 hours in study hall every day. So the discrepancy was extreme. The difference was extreme. I spent most of my time devoted to my sport. As far as numbers are concerned, I don't have them in front of me, but the difference was astronomical.
We often hear the argument, but the players are being compensated already. They're getting a free education. So how do you respond to that in terms of the quality of education that you're able to get as a college athlete and the rules for you regarding outside compensation compared with someone who's on, say, an academic scholarship?
Well, I think that was a legitimate argument when the rules were first implemented. But now that there's hundreds of millions of dollars being brought in every year, there's time to change because athletes deserve more. They're the ones bringing in the money. They deserve a piece of the pie, if you will. My biggest thing is to control your likeness. That was what we initially started with. And what I mean by that is, whether all the athletes get paid or not is one thing, but the fact fact that your likeness is your own, it's what you came into the world with, you should own it. It is your civil right, right? It is yours. So if an apparel company or store wants to use my likeness or have me come to the mall and sign autographs and take pictures, I should be able to do that. The law says I should be able to do something like that. That was my biggest argument. I'm sure, I know I did appreciate my scholarship. I knew that I wouldn't be on campus without it. Not that I couldn't afford it, but my athletic ability awarded me that scholarship, so I appreciated it, and I eventually went back and finished up my degree. I think most athletes are like that and feel that way, but the fact that you're on scholarship should not keep you from earning money with your likeness. If everyone else can make money off of your likeness, you should be able to as well. That was my initial argument and my biggest argument.
And getting to the point of the big dollars involved in college sports, I'm reading from an Intercept article that we'll talk more about later, but the NCAA, for its part, just signed an $8.8 billion deal with CBS to air March Madness, the college basketball championship tournament. So we're talking about the NCAA making $8.8 billion off of athletes like you, and the athletes getting essentially zero of that cut. And that was one of the issues that you had.
Yes, absolutely. You know, one of the biggest arguments that they say is we can't afford to pay the athlete. If we pay one athlete, then we have to pay, you know, another athlete. Well, with all that money, I think you can afford it. And the books that we opened up, essentially said that. So, my thought is, pay all the athletes, you know, I'm sure they wouldn't ask for $500,000 or $1 million, you know, $500,000, just something so they can afford to go to the movies and dinner on the weekend, that sort of thing. But yes, the money is so big and so great, everyone involved, including the athletes, should benefit from it.
Our guest is Ed O'Bannon. He's a former college basketball player of the year in 1995. His new book is called Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. He sued the NCAA and won, and we'll definitely get to more about the lawsuit in just a minute. You were talking just a second ago about controlling the likenesses. You're having the ability to control your own likeness. You think that ideally there would be a national trade association that would bargain on behalf of student athletes for compensation for the use of the names, images, and likenesses, and then that would be distributed.
Yes, absolutely. I think going in to college as a 17 or 18-year-old young person, you don't have any representation. You're signing a contract. The letter of intent is a contract. And in that contract, it says that the NCAA can control your likeness from now into perpetuity. And that is, you know, any person, I think, who is familiar with contracts and familiar with owning your likeness wouldn't sign something like that. But they put that in there, saying that for you to play, you have to sign it. So when you're backed into a corner like that, what do you do as a 17, 18-year-old kid? You of course, sign the contract. So I just feel like in the book we go into that and talk about representation, and if you get some legal representation or someone who is familiar with signing contracts and negotiating, like an agent, maybe you can avoid situations like this.
And the judge agreed with your argument that the NCAA and its college and conference members act as a cartel that fixes prices in an uncompetitive manner under the Sherman Act rather than a free market. In what way?
Well, that right there, because I'm not a a lawyer. I don't want to, I don't want to talk about that. I don't know exactly how to answer that,
not being a legal expert.
Not being a lawyer, not being a legal expert, absolutely.
Fair enough. Let's switch gears to talk about your wife. Rosa is an educator, and you give an example of how she realized how the NCAA treats college athletes when she was a guidance counselor to someone who wanted to go into nursing.
That was one of the big things for her. She lived through it with me while I was in school. And saw the grind that I went through, and understood a little bit. But then once, someone that she was actually working with and was helping map out, their future, that's when it hit home for her. And so, when I came back with her, letting her know that we wanted to start this lawsuit, she was gung ho because, in her business, in her line of work, guidance counseling, she sees it from everywhere. She sees the athletes as well as, just the regular students. And so she was, I think that situation, really, pushed her in this direction.
Earlier, we started to talk about the racial component that is evident here. And I'm going to read a couple of lines from the book. You write, "Don't get me wrong, the life of a college athlete has a lot of perks, but to claim it is just like the life of other college students is total fantasy. The rules aren't about protection or about preserving an imaginary old world order. They're about commercially exploiting teenagers and young adults, many of whom, like me, are black." Yep, I said black. Let's be honest here. The vast majority of NCAA revenue was generated through the March Madness tournament, which features basketball teams made up of mostly black players. And it goes on. But so you went there. You're saying that that this is exploitation of young black men, essentially.
Yes, it is. It's one of those things where you recognize it, but do you want to talk about it? I just felt like, since we're talking about it, let's really just kind of air it all out. Basketball and football are, the athletes are mostly black athletes. There are rules set in place where they have to stay in school for, 3 years for football, 1 year for basketball. And so because they are in those sports for those years, and they have to be there in order to get to the next level, why not make as much money as you can off of them? By not sharing the money with them while they're in school, obviously not only keeps the money, obviously keeps it out of their hands, but it puts more in yours. So, they can't have representation. They can't have agents to guide them in certain directions or, possibly not even go to college and go overseas. We've seen that recently. Absolutely. I think the exploitation has run rampant, especially in the past 20 to 25 years.
Because of these
contracts, the television contracts, the conference, they have their own networks. I mean, there's billions of dollars being made.
Our guest is Ed O'Bannon. His new book is Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:25 in the afternoon. You're listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF Tampa. And Ed, you point out in the book that only three pro sports have eligibility rules, age eligibility rules. The two that you mentioned, the NBA and the NFL, and the third is the WNBA, coincidence between the three of those leagues is that they're majority black, and leagues like the hockey leagues and baseball leagues do not have these age eligibility rules.
Right, exactly. You can be drafted right out, for hockey and baseball. You can be drafted right out of high school. And if you don't, you can have, representation. If you don't like your draft status, you can go back to school. And for baseball, and I believe for hockey as well, be on scholarship and have it paid for. And then re-enter the draft later on. Those aren't money-making sports, right? And they're mostly white. Again, basketball, men's basketball, and football are mostly black, and they can't do those rules are different. Again, it is, I won't say cornering the market. That's a wrong, that's not what I'm trying to say, but they know where the money is being brought in, so you keep those players in that position for as long as you can to make as much money as you can.
After you won your trial, the NCAA made a rule that permitted schools to offer the full cost of attendance up to $5,000 while students are enrolled. Why did they do that, and do you feel that that's a positive step?
I do feel that that's a positive step. Why did they do that? Well, Judge Wilkin essentially decided on that. Where she got that number, I don't know exactly. But I do think that it's one of those things where you have to crawl before you walk. Maybe it's to test it out, see if it works, see if, you know, if it does work, maybe we can increase the number. If it doesn't, decrease, you know. But I think the thought process, to my understanding, was more of a trial basis and see if it works. And then just kind of go from there.
Do you see if it's working? Is it working? Are you talking to students and that are getting this money now? And are they? Do they feel fairly compensated?
I haven't talked to anyone who has received it. I don't know that it has even kicked in, to be honest with you. I do know my daughter was on scholarship at UVU, and that's another thing. People don't know that scholarships are 1 year. And they're like a trial, you know, every year you got to renew it basically. She was on scholarship and she ended up losing it after her freshman year and came back. But when she was on scholarship, she had, a meeting about this very subject, about, cost of attendance and, what they would be getting and that sort of thing. But then she ended up leaving. So I don't know if the ladies got their check. What I do know that is once Judge Wilkin made her decision, it was appealed, and then we went to the Ninth Circuit, which you've already said at the beginning. And so I don't know that anyone's received it. I know they've talked about it, but I don't know that they received it. I personally haven't talked to anyone who has received the check yet.
And just to wrap up what we were talking about the courts is that after it got approved or the decision by the judge was upheld by the appeals court, then the NCAA appealed to the Supreme Court, but the U.S. Supreme Court decided that it wouldn't even hear the case. So that was essentially the end of the legal road and you had won.
Correct. Yep. That was a great, great day. You know, especially when we initially won in court on August 8th. That was a great day. But, yeah, you know, everything was, all the appeals and everything was to be expected. I think both parties wanted to go to the Supreme Court. I know I did, personally, just to get it all kind of etched in stone one way or another. But we didn't. So here we are.
And it seems like every week we're hearing headlines like the one that I'm going to read from over the weekend. Here's a part of a story. Arizona head coach Sean Miller was benched after ESPN reported he was heard on an FBI wiretap discussing $100,000 payment to freshman DeAndre Ayton. On Friday, AP reported, based on documents obtained by Yahoo Sports, a wide range of impermissible payments from agents to at least two dozen players or their relatives. NCAA President Mark Emmert said these allegations, if true, point to systematic failures that must be fixed. And fix now if we want college sports in America. Well, I have a feeling that you'll agree with the idea that this has to be fixed, but you might disagree with the NCAA president about how to fix it. So what are your thoughts about these allegations that keep coming out?
Wow, yes, I agree. with Mark Emmert that they need to be fixed, but I think that the athletes should control their likeness, and I think that they should be paid. So that's where our difference lies. You know, the way that everything has come out doesn't surprise me. It's unfortunate that the people that are caught in the middle of all of this are the kids, you know. excuse me. It's almost like a divorce, you know. Everyone kind of goes their separate ways, but the people that are hurt are the ones that are in the middle, the kids. And that's kind of unfortunate about all of this. I don't know if the kids asked for any money, and I don't know if, you know, themselves, maybe their parents, maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know the details, and I'll find out like everyone else, I'm sure. But it doesn't surprise me that all these allegations have come out. To my understanding, more are going to come out as well. So, you know, when the rules are what they are, you know, you kind of have to expect things like this to happen. It's been happening for a long time. Not everybody does it. Not all kids have their hand out. Not all kids are asking for money or parents are asking for money, but it does happen.
And it's a subtle difference between what you're in. I want to make sure that people understand that you think that this, that the huge money that's being passed under the table, that problem might be solved if everyone gets a fair piece of the pie.
Yeah, I don't know that it will completely be solved. I think that there will always be, you know, those $500 handshakes, you know, that sort of thing. I believe that'll happen, continue to happen. But, you know, the big money, all of that, you know, the $100,000 and the $75,000coming from shoe companies or agents or wherever they're coming from, if an athlete can control their likeness and have sponsorships coming out of high school, because, you know, when we talk about in the book, athletes, they are, you know, in high school, they have their own brand. You know, the social media thing social media is huge, obviously. And the younger audience are great at it. And so they build their brands while in junior high school and high school. So they can have sponsors going into college. They don't need necessarily to call the, you know, Adidas for money. But the fact that the rules are the way that they are, now, you know, these are the results that you get. So that's unfortunate, but that's the way that it is right now. It does need to change. I agree with, what's his name? It does need to change.
With President Mark Emmert from NCAA. Yeah, yeah. Oh, our guest is Ed O'Bannon. His book is Court Justice, The Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. I've only got about a minute left with you, Ed, but I did want to run this headline by you that I saw in The Intercept, maybe the most jaw-dropping headline I've read in a while. I'd like your reaction, if you don't mind. Last Thursday, Sean King of The Intercept published a story headlined, "The NCAA says student athletes shouldn't be paid because the 13th Amendment allows unpaid prison labor." And it's a legal argument they're making in court, but it refers to the 13th Amendment, you know, which abolished slavery, but except for people who have committed crimes. And the NCAA is actually using this precedent in courts. Have you heard anything about that, and what's your reaction?
I heard something about it. I don't know the details, but my reaction was and is, that's unbelievable. What a thing to say and to feel and to use. You know, that's unbelievable. You know, it's hard to wrap my brain around it, to feel that way and to use that type of language wow, it's unfortunate. You know, again, we've come, you know, a long way, got a long way to go. We're moving at a snail's pace, all those cliché words. but they're true. We have come a long way, but my goodness, we've got a long way to go. If that's the way that they're thinking, we've got a long, long way to go.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us on WMNF's Midpoint today, Ed.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. Take care. Ed O'Bannon is the former college basketball player of the year. His new book, Court Justice, is about his legal victory over the NCAA. I'm Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday. It's 12:36 in the afternoon, and you're listening to 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. And we're going to take your calls. I want to call. You can call in at 813-239-9663, or you can email DJ at WMNF.org. We're going to be right back in a minute after this music break.
Look more jobs. Oh,